Hey everyone, before we kick this episode off, I urge everyone listening to like and subscribe to our podcast, wherever you may get your podcast from. So if you listen to us on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating, or also subscribe to us on Spotify. And I urge all of our listeners to head to our website, and you can get more than just our podcast from there. We have news stories all the time there. We have feature articles there. So head to tnpmedia.au. That's tnpmedia.au. All right, without further ado, we'll get stuck into the podcast.
Talk and Power, your motorsport and motoring radio show. Now on 88.5 FM, the Valley comes alive. And podcasting across iTunes and talkandpower.com.au.
This is the Talk and Power podcast, episode 187. And I've always talked about having a round table. We've got the rectangle table. I'm here with my co-host, Simon Gonzo Travellini. We don't have a round table, but we're having a round table for this podcast, aren't we, Simon?
Yeah, I think it suits you. It's more of a square table.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Hey, I'm joined by some really special guests here tonight. With us from the Perth Car Club over there, we've got Rob Pinner, who sits on the committee of the Perth Car Club. Welcome, Rob. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Fedorov. Thank you, Gonzo.
Eddie. We've got Eddie Arachi over there from the Australian Street Machine Federation. How are we, Eddie?
I'm doing well, and thank you for the invite.
No worries. Great to have you here. And Stan Coase, we've had you on before. You've done this. This is your third time.
It is, and as Rob mentioned it, I'd like it to be a little bit more casual.
I know.
It was a bit. I was a bit nervous in the beginning when we sat with you.
Yeah.
But no, I enjoyed it, and it's really been informative. And with Simon and yourself, you sort of make a lot of us feel quite easy and be able to talk comfortably.
Oh, look, this is just...
opposite feedback that I normally get.
It's how I felt, yeah.
We've got a list that we're going to publish one day of all the people that won't come on the podcast.
And the list gets longer as the days go on. But anyway, that's another story. And Stan, I didn't mention you're the president of the Australian Street Machine Federation.
Director,
Western Australia.
Yes, I am.
Australia. Just give us a brief on the Australian Street Machine Federation. For those that may not have listened to episode, I think it was 83, then I can't remember the two previous episodes you've been on.
I think one of the last ones with Mark Williams, Happy. Mm. And so the Australian Street Machine Federation has obviously been operating in Queensland for a lot of years. As I mentioned casually before to Simon, we... Chick Henry started it in the early days over in New South Wales, and it grew from there. I spoke to Chick back in 2015 and said, look, you know, there's some things we want to do in WA in regards to modified vehicles. And he said, look, I know where you're going with this. Do you want to have some sort of a body, representative body? I said, yes. He said, okay. He said, look, everything around Melbourne, Sydney, down that way had all finished up, and Queensland had been the only one operating, and Chick was supportive of that. And he said, look, speak to the president there. I think his name was Lang Crawford. That's it, Lang Crawford. I rang Lang, and he said to me, are you interested in wanting to do a WA part of it? And I said, yeah. He said, well, you can register yourself with the Australian Street Machine Federation WA division. And I went, okay. What do you want to do? And I said it was in regard to the modified vehicles, dealing with DOT, and just wanting them to listen to us. There are smaller groups that were dealing with them, but nothing that had any credibility behind it and backing. And he said, okay, so you want us to back you guys as a reputable body? I said, yeah. So there, that's where it started. In 2016, we registered the WA division of it.
Yeah.
It consisted of about 14, 15 people. People like Simon. I know Simon's busy, so I never got round to asking him, but a few others in the industry that Simon would know, pretty much everyone in businesses, joined the group. When the group started, we sat down, we talked about, they said, so what's the purpose? We said, Everyone wants bigger wheels. Everyone wants a bigger engine in their old car. They were the simple things that came up in discussions. So from there, the group continued for another 3 months. One by one, the time that people had or didn't have, they were dropping off. They were leaving the group. It ended up out of 15 people, down to myself as the director, Claude DeLisi that was with me right from the beginning, James McDonald from Shannon's. I was dealing with James with the Hot Rod Show at Claremont Showground, so I already had a connection with James and worked with him. And Chris Bidmead.
Oh, yeah.
I approached Chris Bidmead. And Chris said, yeah, no problem. So from 2017 onwards, it was just the four of us.
Mm.
Okay, people will say, what can four people do? Well, we chipped away at working on researching. Again, I refer back to Simon because he would know a lot about engineering side of things and governance of different bodies. Claude did a lot of research worldwide in regards to... This might be interesting, Simon. For bigger horsepower, the roads had to be to a certain standard. So Claude went into that side of it and looked into the road standards, and we were way behind in our road standards here. So,
oh, be careful. Yeah.
Well, I did mention that in the parliamentary meeting, so I didn't get burnt on that.
Not yet.
Not yet. Remember, they made you sign that document.
They did. I won't go there anymore. But it was part of. Yeah, it was part of that. That was part of it.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. It's funny you should say that because whenever I am dealing with someone from over east, they always make a big deal about us not having 6-inch curbs on country roads, which I personally think is better.
On country roads, yeah.
Mm. On country roads.
Well, some of the bad accidents were in the statistics, as you mentioned earlier in casual conversation. James brought all those statistics up from Shannon's. And anyway, long and short, we can go into that in another time, but that's what the group, or the four of us, kept working on. But to approach DOT, we needed proof of what we wanted to do. So I'll cut short into right up to probably 2020, where we already had regular meetings with DOT. It was called the Vehicle Engineering... there was an abbreviation for it. It was a group that we had. It changed. The abbreviation changed a couple of times. But it was to show them what a modified car could do on the street and be safe if it was engineered correctly and approved. And they said they started to warm up to it.
So just to summarise, the purpose of the association or federation was to get a system in place that allowed us to modify cars legally.
Spot on. And they were working with us for at least a year and a half, 2 years, on regular meetings, until the NTC, National Transport Commission, shut it down. Now, since then, there's been other groups that have been trying to get back in. None of us have actually got back in, but we still have, as Australian Street Machine Federation, have regular communication with the senior engineer at DOT. He says his hands are tied, but in regards to the engineer, the engineering petition, if I can jump onto that quickly.
Yeah, you may as well. Bring that up now. Yep.
That was part of what they said to us. They said, look, we can't negotiate with you guys any further, but with C4C, when Eddie Irachi started it, Eddie got 12,000 odd signatures, wasn't it, Eddie?
Yeah, it's about that.
And
yeah, for those of you that don't know, that's Concessions for Classics, which is a scheme that provides reduced registration.
Mm. It's a 75% reduction.
On vehicles that are 30 years old. Is that correct? Yeah.
Up until just recently, it was pre-1990. Now, we'll talk about the change shortly.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'll try to cut it quick here so we can get on to other things. But when we when they knew that Eddie had done that, and we had supported Eddie, myself personally, and then brought the Australian Street Machine Federation into it, Eddie managed to get 12,000 signatures. Department of Transport Minister.
Yep,
Rita Saffioti. Rita Saffioti, yes.
Yep. She looked at it, and now when that got approved, we had sent a letter to Saffioti's office to say, look, you know, we are still the ongoing engineering group. And the senior engineer mentioned, he said, look, if you have the support of people, then it could be a possibility to negotiate again.
Yep.
So that's what we are trying to
establish
at the moment.
Yeah.
I'll just fill the gaps in for people as well. So Eddie, yourself. So I see Eddie. I go to a lot of the car shows. I go to Motivation, the Chrysler Day.
Yep.
As well, and I see this guy standing. It was 42 degrees that day, I think.
Yep.
At Motivation.
Yep.
This guy standing in the sun with a clipboard getting signatures from people. So that's that, but that's the core of you have to go to these sort of events to talk to these people, don't you?
Yeah.
Talk us through some of that, like some of the work that you've done in securing these signatures for your petition.
Eddie, I'd let Eddie go with
that. Yeah, because you've been the man on the on the street, literally.
The first one I ever got the clipboard out, as you would say, would be at your shows.
The Hot Rod Show. At Claremont Showgrounds.
Mm.
Yeah. It was around 2019 or 18?
2020.
Yeah. Where I spoke to Stan and I says, look, can you get me into the show? I want to get some signatures.
Yeah.
Signatures for what? And, you know, I mentioned it to Stan and, yeah, after a while it took some convincing.
Yeah, it took a little bit of convincing with the
organisers
of the show to allow
Les
to allow Eddie to have just a table there to be able to get people as they walked out the building.
It was actually good because I stuck myself near the People's Choice.
Yes, near the People's Choice box.
That was voting.
Yep.
Come and sign this. Yep.
Excellent tactical move there.
It was actually. Oh, you've got to be tactical, eh? Still to this point now, I sort of work it out when I'm getting signatures, and no matter what events I go to, I target people that are coming my way. And if I target, like I think I've said to you a few times, Stan, like, you know, there'd be one person who's walking and then there's a group of four or five. So I'll let that one person walk by to get the four because I have to continuously repeat myself 100 times a day about the petition. So I'd rather say it once and get four people to sign rather than just one
person.
Just
the one.
You're going to have to edit that out because now at the car shows, everyone's going
to... when they see you,
they're all going to scatter.
If you go on your own, he won't talk to you. He won't say anything.
Just sign it.
I'd have to grab a megaphone then, I think, eh?
Simon, Eddie did a good job of that, actually. If they try to avoid him, he's...
oh, yeah, I'll follow him. I could be like that.
But I did. I've seen you. I can't remember where we first met, but was it back at Sue's the first 2017 at Sue's?
It was too at the Caramup Shopping Centre there, wasn't it?
Gwellup. That's when
we first met. Of the very first ones.
And you were still knee deep in the signatures back then.
Yeah.
And I recall that. So, yeah.
And I think that really summarises it in terms of what the government's interested in is public opinion.
Yeah.
And if there's public support, then they really have no choice if they want to get voted in again.
100%. That's exactly how it works. And that's why we got C4C in, because it was just in time for, you know, the voting was happening. And, they wanted our votes.
I think in the streetcar scene, in the classic car scene, it's one of the best things that's happened in my lifetime. Probably the best thing that's ever happened in that scene, to be honest. So thanks for getting that done.
Absolute pleasure. I've got to say, it's been... I've enjoyed it. It is hard work. I definitely will say it is hard work getting out there, and I don't think people can realise how much hard work it can be, but, you know, get rewarded.
I want to add to that. Eddie's quite unique in the sense where he just never gave up. He just kept at it. And that's why I could see, and hence why I wanted to support Eddie when I saw that happening in the beginning. And then some good people came on board.
100%. You know, and not tooting each other's horns here, I suppose, once I got to meet these guys in ASMF, I was fortunate to be able to join these guys because, you know, they're the same. They've worked for years and years and, you know, we've helped each other out and we thought, let's tackle this together.
Yeah.
And that's where we are now, trying to get this petition over the line, basically. Mm.
Yeah. The hopefully this podcast can help our petition in the sense where we've always had trouble trying to get people to physically go out and help us. That commitment has been quite a hard one to convince people to help. So it hasn't deterred us from wanting to continue doing it. It's just that I would say one of the people in the car scene was Nick, yourself, Nick.
Hmm.
You actually heard what we were doing and you have supported us and given us a plug every now and then.
Oh, yep. There's definitely people here like yourself, Nick. And...
Yeah, yeah.
So talk us through the petition that you're working on now. We'll discuss that while we're here. So the you're trying to get a change or a swing in the way you want to give the power back to the engineers, basically. Yeah. Yep.
So the petition actually is, let's put some muscle behind our engineers, basically. Mm-hmm. Eh? So we want them to be able to have the final say on our cars. Once they've been engineered by an engineer, then it should be passed by the Department of Transport and not rejected. You know, it still has to go through the DOT, but to do the basic stuff, not any of the modifications as such that the engineer has put his name to and is happy with the work that's been done. So really, that in a nutshell, that's what we really want to happen, eh?
I'm hoping the flight path has changed.
I was going to say, when have we had a plane fly over?
I can hear it quite clearly.
And I can hear it.
Yeah. Well, apologies for that.
Yeah, so look, that's pretty well much what we're asking.
Yep.
And the model behind that, well, as I mentioned before, was South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know so much about what's going on there? Claude Talisi. Mm-hmm. Claude is an Adelaide boy and grew up in Adelaide. And had a lot of contact with the people in Adelaide, but the main guy was Glenn Stankovicius from the Street Machine Association of South Australia, SMASA. When I approached Glenn and spoke to him about this, was had nothing to do with myself and Eddie. I didn't even know Eddie was going for the 90 days.
Sorry, going back here, because that's what it originally was. I was following the motto there that South Australia had, which was $90 for 90 days.
Yep, yes.
Originally, that's what I was petitioning for.
Mm.
Yeah.
We ended up settling for what they gave us, which was the C4C, the concession for classics,
yes,
which was a 75% reduction in our rego, basically.
And that was already happening. But I approached Glenn in regards to Australian Street Machine Federation and working with DOT, and he said, look, do you want some information? I said, yeah. So Claude, being an Adelaide boy, flew over there and met up with him and came back with all these applications of a HKTG Monaro with 15 by 12s on the back, roll cage, 2,000 horsepower. Brought another one with a VB Commodore, again, full roll cage, full chassis, had a big block in it, all registered. And we said, how is this all happening over there? And he said, well, the DOT... only look at the basic functions of the car. They give that approval. And the engineer, it's his liability to consult the customer and give the approval.
And Stan, with that, I know we discussed this a little bit before air.
Yeah.
But is there like a guideline, a national guidelines that the DOT and the engineers could follow to make sure that...
Correct.
You know, everything is done legitimately by the book?
Yeah. Correct. But... I can't quote on this, but John Dombrose over here said that the VSB 14 guidelines here, Rob, was a guideline open to interpretation. So I don't know for sure, I can't vouch if that's how they do it in Adelaide or South Australia, but all I know is we have got documented proof if we get questioned on it, and DOT did question us here in regards to your question.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave them that information. They said, oh, so you're not trying to create anything new? We said, no, we're just trying to mimic what's already happening in South Australia here.
Mm-hmm. I said, okay. In saying that, there are guidelines which are followed.
Yeah, there are. And so it's correct.
Yeah.
So going back to what you were saying before, so the problem is that engineers are signing them off, and then they're going back to the DOT, and the DOT are picking certain aspects of that change.
Of what the engineer has put down his name to. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's the biggest problem at the end of the day. So you're paying, at the end, why are you paying an engineer then, really?
I probably agree with that, because anyone that knows me, I come from the construction industry, I'm not in the motoring scene, but the principle should be the same.
Yeah.
And I know that in my industry, I'll try to be quick, but WA had different codes and regulations to the East Coast, and they wanted to do a national construction code, and it took years, decades, and they eventually done it not so long ago. And what that did, there were some pros and some cons. With us, it was hard because we had different building practices over here. We build more in double brick, whereas over there, they've got brick veneer, fibro, and what have you.
Yeah.
But the principles are the same. And when it come to shires and councils, government bodies, what they did, if you wanted to submit some plans to the council or the government bodies, they wanted to wash their hands before all the onus was on the government body. So I'm just comparing this to DOT, which is the government body.
Yeah.
So what did the councils do in the end? They wanted to cut costs, and then they said, no, we don't want to be responsible anymore. We're going to put the onus on independent certifiers. Okay? So what the councils have done, they've saved a heap of money, so they don't have to employ anyone. So now the clients have to go to independent certifiers, which is in comparison to your engineers in your industry.
Yeah.
And then as long as they're following the codes, the National Construction Code, when you submit those plans, this is just one example, but there's many, back to the government department, which is the council, they can't knock that back because our engineers, which are our certifiers, have signed off on it. So it works in our industry, so I have to agree, I don't see why those principles can't work in yours.
Rob, does that mean that we can look forward to having high-rises crack and fall down in Perth just like they are in New South Wales?
Don't forget, we've got sandy soil here. They've got clay soil, okay? So there's a big difference. And don't forget, WA is like, wait a while for a reason, you know. So,
putting the question out there, but will this change? But like, if we're passing the responsibility back to the engineers, will there be a cost difference in, because they'll have to shoulder that responsibility in terms of
the cost of actually employing an engineer?
No, I mean the cost of the approval. Now if the burden does go back to the
engineer, thing, just in case you didn't.
But now that the burden has gone back to the engineer, in being a final signatory, let's put it that way, do you reckon there'll be an increase in cost?
I would say yes, personally, myself.
It's going to come down to their liability insurance.
That's right, which will come at a cost.
But see, this is the part that's missing from all of this, is that we have statistical data and have had for many decades that modified cars are less likely to be involved in motor vehicle accidents and statistically are safer, and that's per capita. Yeah. So it's not even like, oh, there's less of them. Yeah, that's right. But even if we work it out per capita, it's still... Because ultimately, it costs $250,000 to build a car these days. That's just the reality, right? Anyone that's done it, that's the sort of money you're looking at. And I don't think anyone that's got $250,000 tied up in their car is going to get out there and do something stupid with it. That's just the...
We already presented all that in a PowerPoint to DOT. I'd love to show you guys that PowerPoint, but DOT have got that, and it picks on all those areas that Simon just mentioned. It's proven. You're correct.
It's fact. It's not fiction. It's fact. It's documented. Companies like Shannon's that specialise in that field have all the documentation you could ever want.
That documentation actually came from James.
There you go.
So Hoons is a fallacy. Hoons don't exist. Everyone out there, okay?
Well, see, that's the problem. The problem, the way the public perceives people that modify cars is they see...
They see it's Hoons, but Hoons don't exist. There's no such thing as that word.
Yeah.
Well, I think that someone in a V6, VT Commodore doing donuts out the back of you know, a shopping centre or something is hardly comparable to someone that's got $250,000 tied up in there.
At the back
of
here, three weeks ago while we're recording.
Actually, Nick,
back about four episodes.
What Rob just mentioned, again, Rob, we've gone way past all that.
Yeah.
We sat with Libby Meadhams, the opposition minister at the time, and she said she was getting complaints from all over Perth, people ringing up saying hooning and this and that. And once we proved all those factual information, we're way past all that now.
All jokes aside, I say that tongue-in-cheek, you know, because at the end of the day, the majority of hoons out there, it's not generally people our age or people that are involved in the car clubs. The street machine scene, the car club scene, the C4C scene. Yeah. It's more the young kids, inexperienced, you know, that, you know. They're immature, and then normally by the time they get into their second, third year licence, you know, they've grown up a bit, and you know, so
But I
think education has changed a lot. I don't think it's nowhere near as bad as what it used to be. That's for sure.
Yep.
The word education that Rob picked, Claude likes using that word when we sit with the DOT, and no disrespect to the people at DOT, but with the information that we put together through James and from what he was allowed to give us to give DOT, because there was certain things that was confidential, but it was pretty much giving the information in regards to letting DOT know all the facts. It was the facts that actually made them sit with us and listen. But unfortunately, that all, the door shut last the following year in September, it all shut the doors on us.
The beauty of that, Stan, is that because you have done all that background work now, and it is now up to the public, which is what this petition is about, that once you have the numbers and we've got the data and everything else behind us, there's no way that they can say no. I can't see it. You know, once we have the numbers, it will happen. I'm pretty confident it will happen.
We should probably focus also on some of the positives as well. So recently we've had a change to the C4C as well. So that was a win or a tick or whatever we want to call it. So previously up until just the other day, the C4C was implemented in April of 2021 from memory. I'll be honest with you, hand on our heart, Rob comes here representing the Perth Car Club. I'm from the same car club as well. So is Simon as well, full disclosure. But we were born out of the C4C. So that what you created, Eddie, was the... What's the word you use?
I know what you mean. A lot of clubs formed because of the...
Well, we did.
The glue.
No, well, the I don't know. The word's not coming to me now.
The glue that holds us together as a community.
Well, it's what inspired us to start the club. We kicked the club off.
Pretty much initiated everything,
Based out of C4C. Because we knew that there was something. And, you know, at the time...
Because you tied us.
Yeah.
It's not the only reason, though, Nick. In principle, it made it easier for us, but it wasn't the only reason.
No. Yeah. But we saw a void in the marketplace for... The best thing, at first, I probably wasn't on board with being a member of a car club, but I thought, you know what, if that's what it's got to be, I spoke with Rob, we spoke, you know, and with our group, and we got the ball on it. Best thing we ever did.
That's what I was going to say. It's turned into an incredible thing. It's, you know, people that would not normally catch up because they're busy in life now find time to catch up, and we do things that... You know, like the bowls or, you know, the sausage sizzles and so on. You know what I mean? It's just a great time to get together, which when we were teenagers, we would have done that around each other's houses, working on the cars.
I can't concur anymore. Even like you were saying before, you know, Eddie, like to get in this C4, C3, I think the most pleasurable thing that I get out of it as well, because let's face it, we're a throwaway society.
Yeah.
And the thing that I liked the most about it was, you know, people had these old cars. It was costing them a squillion to keep. and most of these cars were lost forever. They were all crushed for metal, yeah, for parts,
absolutely,
and everything else. And a lot of these cars have got stories. And that's probably what inspires me to be part of a car club too, because every car's got a story, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it the most. That's so forgetting these cars, now it's, you know, instead of costing $1,000 a year, for example, if not more, it's only $250. Mm. And, you know, like I know a lot of our members who have got their grandfather's cars, you know.
Yeah.
Or I know some with great-grandfather's cars that they've been sitting there paying registration, paying insurance, and they just don't want to throw these cars away, you know. So to me, it's the stories behind it as well that excites me more than
that's
anything.
True.
Yep. Yep.
And now with a rolling 30, it's that next gen now. So and you can now buy one of those cars and put that aside and work on it and not have to pay the full rego on it, basically.
Yeah, so now that's what we're here tonight to, I guess, to celebrate or to officially say out to the open that there's a rolling 30-year window now. So previously it was set prior to 1990. Now every year as we get older, that will increase as well. So
another card.
Yeah,
comes on.
Yeah. So I did I just did some numbers, not numbers, but anyway, I worked out. So the Holden VR Commodore, can you believe that's gonna be available? VR Commodore. My mate bought one. Remember
that's
our friend bought one and it was brand new.
The X copy.
Yeah, X copy.
The green one.
Yeah. Anyway, so VR Commodore is now on the list. Oh, EF Falcon. I had an EF. I had the Fairmont. Mitsubishi Evo 2. Todd will be happy about that. This is for you, Simon. The E36 BMW.
How's that for me?
Because you're the BMW guy. And the Nissan, the Z32 300ZX. That's now eligible as well. Yeah. Now, because I don't want to be always talking Holden Ford.
Yeah, we want to bring other things into it.
Yeah, and I mean, these cars, especially the 300ZX.
This is a really bad era of motoring.
The VRs,
especially
right.
The 300ZX.
Yeah, I know you're not a big fan, but they have a big cult following things.
No, they certainly do. This younger gen really loves those type of cars, don't they?
Yep. Yeah. So it brings all those cars in now as well, and as of next year. So this new Rolling 30 is available as of the 1st of January, 2025. Now, we caught up with David Michael as well. So David Michael was kind enough to come to our event and actually release this. He had this to say anyway. This $2 million budget allocation to introduce the Rolling 30-year vehicle eligibility will encourage even more car enthusiasts to register for the scheme. I encourage classic car owners to find out if they are eligible to register for C4C. And can't wait to see even more classic vehicles on our roads.
So, how did it cost $2 million?
What they're saying is that they are looking down at foregoing at $2 million.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what he's saying.
Actually, I think I've actually pulled some stats out to see where he pulled that. Because I've actually got this off the wa.gov.au website tonight. And I've got a printout here. Oh. And I think what they were saying was that they've calculated the amount of cars that they're thinking that are going to be in the C4C from the 91 to the 94. And they've actually got a printout here that actually shows, like, for example, as it is now in the metropolitan area, there's 5,221 cars in the scheme. The Great Southern's got 176. For example, the Golf Tour's got 66. And the whole total for WA is 7,464.
Yep.
So I think where they're pulling the 2 million is, I think they're saying that potentially there's going to be 75,000 extra cars, apparently, that can go for C4C.
Wow.
I think that's the way I'm reading it.
Yep.
So, yeah.
At max, that would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of people were still using those cars as daily cars as well. So it's not necessarily that they'll all jump on the scheme.
Correct. No, I think that they are not seeing this in its true light. In my opinion, it's not going to affect it. They'll actually make more money out of this because there's going to be a bunch of cars that aren't registered now that, you know, I know you don't, but, you know, that I do and a lot of people that I associate with will have 10, 15 cars that aren't registered that will now go, all right, I'll get it registered because it's only...
A good point, actually.
That's
something that's probably not being taken into consideration.
That's true.
So
you're saying the unregistered cars are going
to
be registered because it's cheaper to keep.
Well, like I got a bunch of customers, there'd be probably, just in people that I can think of, a couple of hundred cars they're in warehouses. They're immaculate. They're either restored or they're, you know, survivors.
Yeah.
And they deregistered them because the rego just got too expensive.
Yeah, good
Whereas
point.
I could see those guys dragging them out and getting them registered now so
definitely.
They can use them whenever they want rather than having to get a permit or, you know.
Well, that's what happened with the CFSA, all those
pretty
cars.
Much.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think they're actually going to increase revenue. Yeah. Yeah. Because those ones that are getting driven every day, no one's going to want to go on club rego.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so...
Just to give you a rough idea, so a 1992 EB Falcon was $894 per year. Rego, that'll go down to $177.95 if you can find an EB.
Mm. Yeah.
It's hard.
But I've been looking for an ED Sprint.
Oh, no, forget that. It's easier to get a HO than one of those.
There's actually some EFs as well.
Yeah.
So I was Googling between some of the EFs started in 94.
94, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I found a couple, but I haven't found one in blue yet.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck. I wish you well.
You watch all those cars go up in value now. Eh?
Well, I know.
So what do you guys think it'll mean for, in terms of a change in the demographic that's in the car scene? Because I know in our club, there's a particular demographic. What do you think it'll mean in terms of a change in the demographic? You're going to bring a younger group of...
We're hoping for that to happen. I mean, that was one of the main points that I had brought across to David Michael. I don't know if you remember, Nick, about trying to get our younger generation into these car clubs. And the only way to do that was with their cars. And, you know, these cars from those years onwards were the only ones that they could, you know, sounding rude, that they could afford. So that was their means of getting them into the scene and to...
Yeah.
And that's what we came across.
Some of those cars are actually worth a lot more than our cars. just quietly.
As in what?
You start getting into some of that late model Japanese stuff and, well, look at an S14. You're paying 50 grand for an S14 now.
Yeah.
I think I'm talking more of the EAs and all them type of things, you know.
But even they're getting quite big. They are
100%
there.
But that's just the motoring... Full stop, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But they're the most affordable for our younger generation.
I don't know that there's as many of those as there are into the Japanese, the Skylines and, you know.
Which is what I suppose out of your son and my son, they've been talking about that sort of cars as well, even though they've grown up around the old muscle stuff.
See, we look at an XY or a HK and we go, wow, they look at an R31.
Yeah.
So true. So true.
You just look at it, it's a box.
That is true.
I think it's now with the C4C that majority of our members or our, you know, friend group, it's more, you know, steel bumpers and stuff like that predominantly. I know in our club, I think predominantly you have to be steel bumpers over anything else.
Yep.
Whereas this brings in all the plastic bumpers.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
And if I look at my nephews, for example, like they appreciate the V8s, but they look at the steel bumpers and go, yeah, that's nice, but it's not me.
Because
they didn't grow up with them.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I agree, this next generation, because now, like, I've got some of the Nissans here. Like, you know, it's the 180SXs, the 300ZX, the Skylines. You know, that's going to bring in all the rice burners, I call them.
100%.
Without offending anyone out there. But that's going to bring, it's going to be a game changer.
But they're expensive cars now.
They are. But do you know what? 50 grand's cheaper than a, you know, the 150 grand HK Monaro. So
that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
It's always going to be more affordable, isn't it?
GDR is like a $250,000 car now.
And no, I couldn't believe as well, talking about other makes and models, like going back to the Ferraris that started number one, now the 348s, the Testa Rosses, the 512s and the 456 GTs. They're all eligible for the from the 91
and they all need timing belts every 6 months.
That's interesting, Rob. That is very interesting.
Well,
Testa Rossa, really? I had to think about that. Like, wow.
I would never have thought that, eh?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Nick, there's something quickly to... I've been reading some comments since the Rolling 30 came out, and maybe you could make it clear for the people out there. I've seen a lot of comments going around the fact that, you know, if you go on C4C, you can't go back. Now, I've just been watching. I haven't interacted with any of the comments, but they're saying, oh, you know... You go on to C4C and you're saving dollars on your registration, but, you know, DOT won't let you go back. to full registration.
So we'll dispel that myth immediately right yes. here, right now. You can opt in
yeah.
or opt out. Sorry, you need to be a member of a car club to opt in. Okay, correct. So that's yep. the first thing. But once you're a member of a car club, if you feel the need to opt out, it's not your thing, or you want to sell the vehicle because it's, you know, and you don't want to sell it on the C4C,
yep.
it's merely a simple email to the Department of Transport. It's concessions@transport.gov.au. It's a simple email to them with your details, and then a simple email to your car club. To notify them of the same thing.
Perfect.
They will, Department of Transport will then invoice you for the remainder of your rego
yep.
that's correct. Outstanding, the difference. So you go back up to 100%.
Yeah.
And they'll invoice you. You pay that, you and sell the car, or you're at it. It is as simple as that.
Then you can use it more than 90 days if you wanted to.
Correct. So. Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Nick. That needed to be clarified.
yep.
Yeah.
You guys are obviously here to try and raise awareness and try and get some signatures.
Correct.
So how do people get in touch? How do we get on board? How do we sign up?
I'll let Eddie go with the
online. It's on Facebook, and if you do search up, let's get some muscle behind our engineers, that's what they need to do. So it is on Facebook pretty well.
So what's the page called?
Let's get behind our engineers, put some muscle behind our engineers.
Or go to the Australian Street Machine Federation Facebook page as well. Yep. Or your website as well.
asmfwa.com.au.
Mm. It's there as well. Yep. Yep. Or the Australian Street Machine Federation and WA website as well. Facebook page
Facebook
as well.
Facebook page, correct.
Yeah, it's there
as well. It's on the WASMA one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the WASMA one as well.
WASMA as well.
Yeah. Yep.
I think Romble and Rocco have shared the petition in their club as well, and Northern Steel has as well.
Mm, yeah. We're talking about commentary as well. I want to address something here as well while we're talking about this. I noticed with Rita Saffioti's release, there were some negative comments about the new scheme. It's from the outset, people perceived this as rich guys, those are their words, rich guys taking from the government, or words to that effect. The money hasn't been taken from the government. That's first and foremost. Number two, I have added up rough estimates, and what people don't understand is when you're in a car club, the money we save on Rego, and Rob will tell you this, the money that we save on Rego, I'm telling you, we spend hand over fist a lot more in just car club, not running the event, attending events.
Attending.
Going here, having a burger at, we go to Krispy Kreme's, right?
Yep.
We go to the Tuscany Association, have a lunch there. We go to the Sterling Adriatic and have a dinner there. We go to the Italian Club, have our AGM there. We try and support local clubs and communities. All the things that we add up together. We went to the Parkerville. We had a cruise to the Parkerville.
That's right.
Now, I'm not saying that money, that it's the same amount. It's going back into local.
Into the...
But still, at the end of the day, we're spending money, and it's GST. There's taxes in the money that we're spending as well. It's not the same amount, but we're still putting money back
into the system. Or the fundraising we're doing for the community as well, to put on top of that.
Guys, I didn't know that Andrew Forrest, Gina Reinhardt and Kerry Stokes had C4C cars. I had no idea. This comes as a complete...
I know, that was the other thing as well. I mean, I don't mean...
Where was this, Rita? Sorry, Nick.
It was on Rita Saffioti's Facebook page. So she released it, and there was some negative... I commented on... I answered back the ones that I saw. Yeah, I did, because I felt it needed to be addressed. I didn't think it was fair commentary. I wasn't...
You got sucked into that whirlpool, didn't you?
I went down the rabbit hole. I didn't think it was fair commentary because I know as... And I'm not just talking about ourselves, and I'm not talking on behalf of our car club. I know there's other car clubs out there. I don't want to mention their names, but Pete and Allison and Northern Steel that raise a ton of money for charity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. You know, that's just one that comes to mind.
Most do, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about charity. Yeah, it's always about the charity.
And they're always great events. The kids love going to them. You know, it's just Yeah, it's the wrong... I mean, if you want to go down that path, then yeah. I could give you a list of...
But it's so true, Nick. They don't understand that part of it.
Yeah.
You know, they just, like I said, you're all rich and if you can afford a car like that, you can afford...
Yeah, that was some of the commentary. Like, if these guys can afford these cars, what and about they can the, afford the registration.
What about the guys with Land Cruisers?
Exactly right. Well, that's the thing that I can't work out. Like, if you've got a steel bumper, like a nice Holden or HK, whatever it is, and you rock up, wow, you know, look at that guy. That, how much does your car cost? But someone rocks up in a $160,000 Land Cruiser, no one blinks an eyelid.
Actually, like,
that's just...
In regards to the Land Cruiser, Rob, I had a guy come around and do some work this afternoon. He's a grano, probably in his 20s, early 20s, and he said, oh, I just bought a Land Cruiser for $107,000. Yeah. And I went, oh. But then he tells me he bought it with Bitcoin. He put $1,500 into Bitcoin 11 years ago, and he ended up with $107,000.
Wow.
And he bought his Land Cruiser because he wanted a four-wheel drive.
$107,000, that was just a cab chassis.
Didn't even have a spare tyre with
no
it.
No air conditioning.
That was a real basic model.
Yes.
Oh, we like making fun of Land Cruiser. We've done a special episode on the Land Cruiser. We called it the Land Cruiser Effect. The effect that it has on the economy. Guys, look, I mean, you're more than welcome to stay. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we finish up as well?
Yeah, I suppose in regards to revenue coming back into the into the community, one of the researchers that we gave DOT Australia-wide, it was statistical information that Claude had put together, was increasing the giving more... allowing more applications for modified vehicles with the engineering also supports the Aftermarket Association in regards to all the businesses that are involved in that. And I think there was a figure where Claude came up, it was a stat that he found $11 billion was generated through modified vehicles being registered and all the industry that was involved. Mm-hmm. So as soon as DOT saw that information, they were blown away. They said, oh, okay. So it can be an advantage to government.
And last year, $9.9 billion was spent just in restoration.
Yeah,
there you go.
$9.9 billion.
Employment that it created was the other thing. Mm-hmm. Everyone was putting on staff.
Yep.
Especially in South Australia, but it did happen here as well.
It did here as well.
They just couldn't keep up with all the builds. So they started employing people. Yeah. So, you know, there was definitely money to be made.
One of the things, not long before our meetings were stopped, at that parliamentary meeting that we had, they asked us to prepare stats of invoices from businesses in Perth, upholstery, mechanical, transmissions. I should have come to you, Simon, about the torque converters. But we showed them all that, and they were blown away with the figures of what it costs that people spend to put into these cars. And then they went, well, Hoons don't spend $100,000.
No.
No.
And then the way I see it as well is I think the government, the window's closing as well, and this is where I believe they should be more proactive as well, in the sense that, like we're saying before air, like, you know, how long are these... you know, motors, petrol-powered motors, going to be around for. Mm. Let's face it, I think that window's closing a lot faster than what we all predicted. Yeah. And the way I see it is that if we're not training the next generation of mechanics and stuff, and I think the industry is going to be lost for a long time. I know that in my industry, the construction industry, we went through the downturn. And I think this is why we're suffering so much now, is because the government didn't put into the training of the apprentices 7 years ago, and this is where we're paying the price today. So I believe that in your industry, the same thing will happen if they don't hurry up and invest into it now. Because when batteries come in and there's going to be less people in your industry around, it's going to be worse off. And do you know what? Then things are actually going to cost more in the end because the trades are going to be limited. Yep. You know, the tradesmen that know what they're doing can name their price, and it's more of a problem long term.
Mate, tell me about it. You tried to get some shoes on a horse lately? Jeez.
Yeah. Anyway, gentlemen, look, I mean, is there anything else? Rob, is there anything you wanted to add as well while you're here as well?
Well, do you know what? I've got this quote from Rita Safiotti. Dan was saying, Rita Safiotti really likes the new C43. If you don't mind it, can I read this out?
Yeah.
What does it say? Where is it? So this is from Rita herself. This is from the wa.gov.au website, and she states, "We love to see the well-preserved classic cars on WA roads, and the introduction of the rolling 30-year-old vehicle eligibility opens up to the concessions for classic scheme to many more WA vehicle owners. We work closely with DOT-approved motoring car clubs to introduce the scheme in 2021, and I believe car members will welcome the expansion of the scheme to include even more eligible cars." So that's from Rita herself.
Yeah,
so,
perfect.
She's a big motorhead. She loves her Taranas. Well, she grew up around Taranas.
She did say that, because her Manaras, brothers.
Yeah.
Is it her brothers?
Yeah.
Her brothers.
Yeah, her brothers are car fiends, so that definitely helps.
Do you know, can I share a story here? I don't know if I'll be able to. I'll say it anyway. I'm sure it's in good fun. The official launch of C4C back in 2021, in April of 2021, it was at Kelmscott Licensing.
Yes.
And we had a good friend of ours, John, his Monaro there. And someone from the TV crew said, "It would be a good idea, Rita, if you jump in the car and just drive around the car park." And John was all for it. And her advice...
Hang on. There's a bit of the story you haven't told about John's Monaro.
Oh. John's advisor was immediately... No, that is definitely not happening.
What? How was Rita's reaction to that?
She took it on board.
Well, actually, now that you said about John's Monaro, Claude's Monaro at the front of Parliament House, and they took the photo of us. She leaned on the Monaro and had a hand on the roof, and Claude said, she goes, "Whose cars is this?" And Claude said, "It's my Monaro." And she said, "Oh, can I sit in it?" So Claude opened the... He was over the moon because she loved his Monaro. And then she gave the story of how she grew up around those cars and all that. So Claude went away so chuffed. So you have to ask Claude when you see him next time.
I will. To be fair to John, it's all gone back to original, thank you.
Oh,
it wasn't back then.
No.
So, Nick, just one final thing with the petition. Look, if we can continue to get people to help support that petition, and if they need any clarification of questions they were even asked tonight, we're more than happy to always answer the questions. And no matter how big the group grows or doesn't, myself, Eddie, Claude and James, and a few others that have helped along the way with the petition, we're not going to disappear. We'll be here till the end.
No, you guys have been chipping away at it for such a long time, and I know, and this is hard work. This isn't easy. This is not something that happens, you know, send a couple of emails off, hope for the best, and fingers crossed. It takes a lot of dialogue, a lot of,
it does.
I know, I see this guy at so many shows with that clipboard, getting signatures. I mean, Custom Cars and Coffee, Jason, big supporter.
Oh, Jason has been a great supporter.
Yep.
He has.
Yeah, always willing to let us set up a stand there the time.
Yep.
When you announced it on Sunday, I was in Malaysia still on holidays in Penang, and I should be more excited about my holiday, but I was more excited about this when Eddie sent me the information. And I saw it on Facebook with yourself and David Michael and Eddie.
It was a big shock for me that day. Like I says, you knew. I had no idea that was going on anyway.
Yeah.
And a big thanks to David Michael as well, MLA for Belcato.
He's been awesome. You know, Rita as well. Can't thank them both enough for what they've done. For everyone in the car.
And Eddie, we must thank Nick for acknowledging
100%
Australian Street Machine Federation as well.
Thank you. Thank you guys. I mean, without you guys, we don't have it. And without these guys, we wouldn't even have a car club.
No, that's right. Without C4C, we wouldn't have a car club.
Actually, I suppose while I'm thinking, I really probably should thank Mick Allender.
Yep.
He was a big help for C4C.
Mm-hmm. He was.
And Mick Rack as well.
Mick Rack.
Yeah.
Both Micks.
They helped out quite a bit as well, basically. Yep.
Mick's enjoying his semi-retirement.
Yes, he is. Yeah, but if he's listening there, you keep enjoying, mate.
So Mick Rack and Mick Allender.
Yeah.
We need to thank them as well.
Look, we'll take a short break here. If you want to join, stay on with us. We're going to talk. What are we talking? MotoGP and NHRA.
And broken microphone.
Technical problems there. So we're going to take a short break here. You're more than welcome to stay. If you need to get going, feel free. It's up to you. But I'll just say it now. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Eddie. Thanks, Stan. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, guys.
It's our pleasure.
Thanks, Gonzo. Thanks, Nick.
We hope you're liking this podcast. If you are, head to our iTunes or Spotify podcast channel and like and subscribe to us there. Also head to our website tnpmedia.au. You can get all of our episodes, every single one we've ever recorded, from our website there as well. There's also a heap of YouTube content, so head to our YouTube channel and subscribe to us there. That's Talkin' Power. Wherever you get us, make sure you like and subscribe us there. We can really do with the subs. Thanks everyone. Now back to the second half of the podcast. All right, welcome back to part two of this episode 187. We've still got the guys hanging around, so thanks, guys, for hanging around.
No problems.
We'll just be in the background.
Yeah, just listening.
This is a live audience, is it?
A bit of a live audience.
First live show.
Open to criticism here. Hey, we'll just quickly chat MotoGP. I didn't catch the Saturday sprint. I saw that on replay, but I watched live last night the race from Jerez, as they say.
Is that how you say it?
Apparently, yeah. Jerez.
But it's
not Jerez. I know.
Jerez?
No, it's Jerez.
Jeez. Wow.
That's how they say it. I don't know if that's... Anyway, that's how it's pronounced. Hey, amazing race. We'll talk quickly about the sprint race. The track was dry, but it looked to be wet.
It looked like it had some patches, but a whopping 9 riders did not finish the race.
Yep. Well, I think Marquez came down as well, but managed to get going again. I thought he was one of the ones that fell as well.
He definitely fell, yes.
Yeah. So that was on the Saturday. So, yeah, 9 riders went down, but I think...
But some big names, too.
Yeah. So...
Was it a Maverick?
Yeah, Maverick Vinales.
Which I was cheering for.
Yep, Brad Binder.
Brad Binder, yeah.
Yeah, Alex Marquez.
Espargo.
Espargo.
Bastianini.
And even Bagnaia fell down as well. So it's interesting but the track didn't appear to be wet, but they were reporting that there were damp patches through the track.
Did you catch the highlights at all?
Of the
sprint race?
Yes, I did, yeah.
They're just sliding off like
I know. And there was three that went off in the same corner, but not...
But they didn't contact each other. It was incredible.
But hey, I reckon the Sunday race was probably one of the greatest of all time. The commentator, special comments. Simon Craft.
Yeah.
He said it was probably in the top 10 of all time. And I know I wrote here a pretty big statement. Here's why. Firstly, it was from the heartland in Jerez in Spain. Secondly, almost 300,000 people over the weekend. That's a crazy number. 297,000 at the track over the weekend. Thirdly, the sprint race had 8 crashing out. That doesn't make it amazing, actually, now that I think about it. But fourthly, the epic tussle between Pecco Bagnaia and Marc Marquez. I think it will go
down. Nick, and fifthly,
yes,
in Spain, Italian rider wins and Italian rider comes third.
And Ducati 1-2-3 as well, if you don't mind.
It's like when Hamilton wins at Monza.
Which he has done. But, I mean, these two guys literally went shoulder to shoulder. And I wrote here, well, actually, shoulder to Michelin front tire. If you saw that, like, with sort of 6 laps to go, it was crazy between those two.
Yeah.
It was neck and neck. You know, Marquez got the jump on him on pole. But Marquez had pole and got a good lead. But then Jorge Martin showed, you know, he got out there and actually was looking like he was going to win.
This is his season.
Yeah. And then he went down. So it left Marquez and Bagnaia, like, to go for it. You have to remember that those two guys actually fell down the day before on the Saturday as well. So, Yeah, they would have been conscious of the track and it being wet.
Did you see the stack that Acosta had?
No, I missed it. But it ceased practice the day before.
I didn't think he was going to make the race.
No, well, they excuse me, and they weren't able to practice for the rest of that session as well.
His exit speed was over 200 kilometres an hour.
Yeah, that's crazy. But no, I missed that crash itself. You know, I said here, it's also remiss of me not to mention Marco Bezzecchi as well. That was an amazing ride on the Valentino Rossi 46 machine as well. I thought he did a magnificent job. And he actually came back at them near the end of the race as well, because they were looking like, because they were tussling so hard, their lap speed had actually dropped significantly by 2-3 seconds. Yep. So Bezzecchi came back into the fold near the end of the race. But I reckon it felt almost like a victory for Marquez. He seemed to engage with the crowd at the end of the race and seemed to enjoy the...
Yeah, that may have been because he was the only Spaniard on the podium.
That's true. So, I don't know, it felt like a bit of a victory for him. And the Spanish one would definitely... The Spanish crowd were definitely riding with him. And it was just great to see. In that last few laps, honestly, you couldn't hear the bikes for the crowd. The crowd noise overrid the sounds of the bikes. So, it was... It was awesome. All right, you have to forgive me, but the DJ thing is just not washing on me. I'm not enjoying the DJ. I don't get it.
Anyway.
I did say here in the notes, but I am an old... So anyway, I just don't understand. But congratulations to Pecco Bagnaia of Italy. The factory Ducati winning. Mark Marquez, second place in the Gresini Ducati. And then in third place, Marco Bezzecchi in the VR46 Ducati. Look, Ducati took all top five places. Mark Marquez in the Gresini Ducati. It's great to see the brothers riding together. Eh? I love it. And Ennio Bastianini in the factory Ducati as well, coming fifth. So it was a great, great weekend for the Ducatis.
But you know, you say it was a great race. The last round, you had three different makes on the podium.
Yeah.
I think that... You know, as a general rule, everyone wants to see more of that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a good point. And it was nice to see the Aprilia.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, to do so well as well.
I love the fact that Ducati's been dominating, but, you know, one horse race doesn't really...
Yeah. No. Hey, Simon, talk us through the gloves are off in NHRA. The Bob Tasker video, he's making... I don't know. He's been watching a lot of John Force videos from the 80s, obviously. So Bob Tasker. It's great to see him quite animated about the whole situation.
Yeah. There's been a lot of rumours running around since he ran 341 mile an hour at the Pro Showdown. And those rumours have centred around the intake manifold, because Wilson Manifolds posted immediately on social media after that incredible run. He went 340, then he beat his own record. So the first to 340, then to go 341. Wilson were quick to take credit for the intake manifold, and that raised a lot of eyebrows, because there are strict rules the NHRA mandate on the intake manifolds, dimensional rules, and the manifolds must be approved. And there's only a handful of manufacturers that make them. But the what they were doing, this is my understanding, is they were testing the flow of each port, and then they categorised the manifold, and then they categorised a fuel curve to go with that. Because if one port happens to flow more air, well, we need to give that cylinder more fuel, vice versa. So because of all these rumours, Tasker wanted to clear up any, you know, wrongdoing on his part. So the Tasker Ford team submitted all their intake manifolds to the NHRA tech department at Gainesville to have them checked, and they all came back clear. That was until the second day of qualifying at the second four-wide race for the season at Charlotte, North Carolina, Z-Max Dragway. The NHRA tech department deemed all of Tasker's manifolds to be illegal due to the colour.
Yeah, to colour.
So apparently, when Wilson prepares the manifolds to be flowed, a process all teams do, as I explained earlier, they discolour the manifold with some cleaning process. Now, Alan Johnson, the manufacturer of the particular manifolds in question, was present during the inspection and the later meeting with the tech department, shared his opinion that the manifolds were dimensionally standard and as such were legal. But the NHRA did not share that view and deemed the colour change to be a modification, and modifications are not allowed.
Mm.
Luckily, Steve and Billy Torrance, the owners of the Capco drag racing team, loaned the Tasker team a manifold with flow data, and the Ford Performance PPG Mustang did not disappoint, rolling out a 3.834 second run at a record setting for Z-Max Dragway, 338.34 mile an hour, while winning the Too Fast, Too Tasty Mission Foods Challenge.
I'm going to stop you right there. Let's circle back here then. So Bob, at a press conference after he was disqualified at that event, said he was going to pack up and go home. They didn't actually disqualify him.
He said that if they couldn't get an intake manifold,
yep, he was going to go home.
They had no choice because they didn't want to run an untested manifold. Yep.
So he was able to secure one and continued racing. He's pretty animated about the whole situation, and as he pointed out, in HRA and in many types of drag racing, you guys often have to weld up cylinder heads for repair. That's not tested. And you could quite...
Look, I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say that, yes, it's not, but the motors do get torn down, particularly NHRA tech is pretty, pretty involved, so classes like stock, super stock, comp eliminator, where there's particularly stock and where there's cylinder head rules and so on, they do pull the motors down and check them, or the motors get tagged, and we have a similar system here. So I would imagine if anyone suspected anything, any wrongdoing, then they would, rip the cylinder, and the heads come off every lap anyway. You know, they put a full rack of pistons in there, they change the liners if they need to. So I don't see that as being as big a deal as the manifold, but in my opinion, the colour, if they're concerned that may have fatigued the manifold in some way, which is possible. So, for example, I believe that if you use certain cleaners on titanium, there is potential. So the titanium clutch, for example, the flywheel, there is potential for that to fatigue and break. Yep. Now, whether that's the same with these manifolds, I don't even know if these are magnesium or their billet aluminium. They're probably billet aluminium, I'd say. We use magnesium ones on the alcohol cars, but obviously you're containing an explosion when these things, drop a valve or something. It is incredible how much force. I mean, the things are making 11, 12,000 horsepower. So,
yeah. Do you think this is payback from the pro shootout where Bob may have suggested that some of the opponents had the headers tilted back?
Well, I think it goes even further back because if you recall, he got busted for laid back headers. But the argument was that the exhaust gases are around 1400 degrees Fahrenheit coming out of these things. And obviously the metal is close to a melting point. It's definitely fatiguing. And then you have the pressure. So if you can imagine how much cylinder pressure it takes to make 12,000 horsepower, and we've all seen it when they drop a cylinder, they change lanes because there's just so much force coming out of them. Now, the reason the NHRA mandated a degree angle for the header angle was because of the Cruz Pedregon, the famous 300-mile-an-hour wheel stand. I don't know if you've
seen it. Yeah, I remember that well.
So that was when NHRA said, no, enough's enough. We have to control this because the downforce that keeps these things on the track, a lot of it is generated from the headers. And as they were laying them further and further back and using them as thrusters, it took that downforce away and the potential for that giant wheel stand, as we saw, which was incredible. Amazing job.
Yeah.
They should have given him the championship just on that
one. Because the body, remember that one, the body sort of lifted off as well.
It was amazing.
Landed back again.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. And he won the run.
He did
win the run. So he got caught out for that. Now, how much were they laid over? It was point something degrees. It wasn't degrees. It was points of degrees. So it is plausible that, they had gotten hot, they'd fatigued, and they'd laid over a little bit. So I think this has probably got a little bit to do with this. There was a lot of talk at the pro showdown that he was running laid-back headers. Mm. Now, I believe that Lonnie was there and checked the vehicles himself.
Yep.
So that's the same NHRA tech guy that's busted him. Look, I don't know what brought it on. Maybe it is payback. Maybe I don't know, but you know, Bob certainly it was great to see him come out and run 3:38 because it vindicated him and his team of any wrongdoing.
Yeah, yeah.
So other two fast, two tasty winners included the unstoppable Gage Herrera in Pro Stock Bike and likewise Eric Enders in Pro Stock. On that note, neither of these two categories are without their own controversies. Matt Smith calling out the Vance and Hines team and the NHRA Tech Department about withholding critical parts like crankshafts. Vance and Hines is the only manufacturer for Suzuki crankshafts. And the obvious parity issue between the V-twins and the new Vance and Hines Suzuki four-valve cylinder head. The Tech Department did remove Vance and Hines' special fuel, but the teams actually went quicker and faster on comparable conditions, even after the fuel change. But more on both of those categories later. Top fuel, too fast, too tasty, went to Justin Ashley, taking a wire-to-wire win with a quickest light and the quickest DT of the quad. Justin capitalised on that win and took home the trophy in the main game with another wire-to-wire win in the Skag Racing Top Fueler. Runner-up was Clay Milligan, followed by Doug Coletta, and fourth was Anton Brown. Apart from Justin, that final quad seemed like a blast from the past. Doug's uncharacteristically slow 077 light was his downfall compared to Justin's 046 and Anton's 047. This moves Justin to top spot, just 23 points ahead of Sean Langdon and 51 points ahead of Steve Torrance.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm happy to see a bit of change at the top end of Top Fuel.
But yeah, it was good to see Clay Milligan, Doug Coletta, and Anton Brown. Brought back a lot of memories.
It did. That's yeah, that's old school. That is Clay, especially Clay Milligan as well, and Anton Brown as well. It's good to see them back going rounds.
Yes,
those guys.
Matt Havian took the honours in Nitro Funny Car with an astonishing 0.29 light in the finals. My guess is that Matt took a page from fourth place getter John Force's book and rolled in a little deeper. His 0.911 60-foot time considerably slower than runner-up Daniel Wilkerson's more realistic 8.82. A third was J.R. Todd. Austin Prock is leading the points 48 ahead of J.R. Todd and 90 ahead of Bob Tasker the third. Pro Stock did not disappoint, with the favourite Eric Enders getting bumped in the second round with a sundial measured slower than paint drying 060 light. The master of the whole shot
was quite fast for most races, but that's slow for her.
You haven't been to the drags for a while, have you?
No, 060 light.
In Pro Stock.
Yeah, in Pro Stock it's crap, but I mean,
for what?
I'd take an 060 light any day.
Well, you wouldn't win Super Street with an 060 light these days.
It's still a lot of guys take that.
That's a terrible light. That's all she has to do is let go of the clutch.
Oh, now we're being critical of Erica. Jeez.
It's a job, but.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's like saying a footballer that can't catch.
We have a few of those.
Anyway. The master of the whole shot victory was whole shot herself with the slowest reaction time of the quad, only coming third by virtue of Jerry Tucker red lighting. On the other side of the table, Greg Anderson, old enough to be Erica's granddad, took a convincing win with the quickest light of the quad, an 0.11, and the quickest pass, a 6:53. Greg took that performance advantage with him into the final quad, with it being a 50-50 KB Titan Racing versus Elite Motorsports. Greg getting it done with an 0.34 light 6:50 flat over Aaron Stanfield, with Dallas Glenn coming third and Christian Quadra rounding out the quad. That Christian Quadra, he's due for a win.
Yeah, he is.
It's gonna happen. It's not far away. I can see it happening. The points tell a different story, with Erica leading by 18 over Dallas Glenn and Greg Anderson in third, 38 points behind. Honourable mention, Jed Coughlin Jr. in fourth spot, 65 points behind the leader. We all had big expectations of Jeggy's return, and he hasn't disappointed.
No. He's done well, Jed Coughlin. It's good to see him out there.
It is. While we're on the subject of Pro Stock, this event saw a big change in the intake manifold rules. Teams were advised that no deflectors could be fitted internally to the intake manifolds, and that the traditional covers that prevent prying eyes from getting any clues on the design of the intake manifold had to be removed. A lot of commentators were expecting to see the KB Titan cars slowing down, as Greg Anderson had been the centre of numerous intake manifold rules interpretations, but this wasn't the case, as Greg showed no sign of slowing down.
Can you just clarify that then? So
what it is, they've got an intake manifold that is very similar to like a Holley LS manifold. Okay, so you got the throttle body at the front.
Mm.
Okay, the NHRA mandated the injector location, and now I'm speculating here. There was rumours, I don't know whether it was actually ever proven, but there was rumours that Greg had fitted a spray bar up the top of the intake manifold that sprayed down into the ports. The longer the fuel acts on the air, the more time it has, the more it can cool the charge, and that reduces detonation. So there was rumours that he'd been caught with this, and his response was, well, they're not injectors, so
yeah, okay.
I haven't done anything wrong. So then
that's a good point. That's
pro stock.
That's understanding the rules, isn't it?
So the latest thing is, because the air has to make a fairly sharp turn to get into the two front cylinders, they tend to suffer, right, and have less air available to them. So the rumour was that there were deflectors inside the manifold, so curved pieces of metal, I guess, or, you know, whatever, that were deflecting the air to favour the front cylinders. And they'd done, you know, multiple testing with this and worked it out. And the NHRA, for whatever reason, decided that this is no bueno, and, you know, made a rule to state that it was illegal. Now, me personally, I don't get it, because that was probably the one area that I thought you could do whatever you wanted, but apparently not. Now, you know, anyway. So, yeah, moving on.
Moving on, pro-stock motorcycle.
Pro-stock motorcycle continues to be the Gage Herrera show, with another wire-to-wire win, an 019 light on a 684-202 mile-an-hour run. I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with the Vance and Hines gate, but the V-twin races, in particular Matt Smith, have been trading blows with Vance and Hines customers like Steve Johnson, with Matt accusing Vance and Hines of selling him inferior components like crankshafts and withholding components like cylinder heads. As I mentioned earlier, CycleDrag.com host Jack Corpella, if I didn't pronounce that properly, Jack, has been weighing in and giving the teams a platform to voice their parity concerns. This has been a long-going battle since Vance and Hines' dominance with the Harley-Davidson-backed V-Twins. The V-Twin platform that Vance and Hines' team ran was only available to Vance and Hines, and it wasn't until George Bryce from Star Racing and SNS designed and developed the current V-Twin platform that races like Matt Smith are running, that there was a commercially available V-twin platform. Now, Matt won, I think, 5 championships with that.
6, wasn't it?
6?
6 or...
5 yeah. or 6. One, a lot of championships, anyway. Pretty much the only ones that Vance and Hines didn't win over the last 20 years, 30 years or so.
That's true.
To add fuel to the fire, the NHRA recently allowed Vance and Hines teams to run the newly designed billet crankcases, their new 4-valve cylinder heads, and wait for it, their own special fuel. Bit of nitro in there or what? Lonnie Grimm, the National NHRA Technical Director, was recently quizzed about this. This was on WFO radio. And responded by announcing that this event at ZMAX would see the fuel removed from competition, but felt that it was Gage's riding that made all the difference. Now, you know that I believe that any type of motorcycle racing is the only pure motorsport where the rider is really, you know, inputting a lot into what the machine does.
Mm.
But I don't know, on a drag bike. Like, I mean, you know, he's still going to have a lot of input, but is it going to show up? You know, because everyone's talking about the 60-foot times. Now, I've seen Matt Smith get really close to where Gage is, and I think he's right on the cusp of getting it. But Gage has his particular riding style where when he takes off, like, let's go to clutch, he kind of lunges forward. He uses his weight. Now, some people, you know, some commentators believe that this comes from his no-bar background because he races those wild six-second, 200-plus mile-an-hour street bikes, okay, with no wheelie bar. But I'm not so convinced. I think that that's a bit of a decoy that probably, you know, the Vance and Hines team have signed. Go, look at this over here. Don't look at what we're doing here. Look at this over here. Anyway, he added that he would be watching the performance of newest team member, Richard Gradson, who's taken over from...
Eddie Krawick,
correct. Yes. Thanks, Nick. I wrote it in notes. And used that to determine if it was the bike or the rider. I don't know about you guys, but judging by the performance of Gage's bike, Vance and Hines do have a massive advantage over the other Suzuki teams, and the NHRA really does need to curb them. It's been suggested that they need to take 100cc of engine size away from this combination. Now, when I say this combination, in particular, the Vance and Hines four-valve head, I've got another solution, because you know me, I'm all about solutions. And it's a much cheaper, much easier way to do it. Why don't you just put a restrictor plate on them?
Yep.
Right? That's every other form of motorsport uses restrictor plates. Le Mans, you know. That's the way to do it. Anyway, as far as Lonnie's comments about watching the performance of Richard Gradson, it wouldn't be hard to slow down your B rider and make the A rider look better. Now, I've listed the times here, and the thing that stands out is the massive difference in mile an hour. You know, Gage managed to go 203.34, right? The quickest that we saw Gradson go was 201.55.
Yeah.
That is like light years in pro stock. Yeah. You know what I mean? That is massive.
And he's gone as slow as 199 as well, Gradson.
Yeah, but let's disregard, because that was a 680, right? The rest of the runs are in the 70s, right? Now... You know, the argument, there's been a lot of banter on social media on cycle drag in particular. A lot of people really giving Jack a hard time and saying that Jack sided with Matt Smith. Smith's times, you know, I don't think really tell the whole story. I think you got to look at the mile an hour, because the mile an hour is the horsepower, right? And if you look at that, then Gage has still got over a mile an hour advantage on him.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next closest Suzuki that was comparable was Ellie Tonglet.
Mm.
And, you know, once again, look at the mile an hour difference.
Yeah.
There's a solid 2 mile an hour there.
Yeah, there's a fair bit there.
You know what I mean? So anyway, that's just my opinion. I think the NHRA needs to do something about it, but will they? You know, Vance and Hines is a good thing for them. Suzuki is a good thing. Suzuki's on the midway now. So I don't know if you've been to an NHRA event, but they have, like, basically the royal show that travels with them. And that's they call that the midway. And that's where you buy T-shirts and so on. Suzuki's got a big... You've got to pay money to be on there. Suzuki's got a big display there.
Yeah. So when I went to the midway back in 05, I think it was Harley was on the midway back then.
Yeah, and... What was Vance and Hines?
Harley.
Coincidence?
Probably not. But they were. I remember that distinctly, actually, back in 05. So, yeah. We'll just quickly have a quick chat about also while we're here. I know time's getting away from us, and we've got guests here as well that probably want to go home.
But Stan looks like he's going to fall asleep in a minute.
He said he was tired before.
Interesting.
IndyCar Penske error, or was it? This is an interesting conundrum we find ourselves in. So Scott McLaughlin and Joseph Newgarden were disqualified from race one at St. Petersburg about a week ago now. So they were using the push-to-pass button on the start of the race. Something doesn't add up here, and what I mean by that is, A, there's no in the software or in the running of this sport, there's nowhere to detect whether you've used the push-to-pass button. So it was detected on TV commentary. No, there's problem number one. I can't believe this sport doesn't have the ability to see or disable push to pass at the start of a race. Scott McLaughlin admitted to doing it and said it was a mistake. And Joseph Newgarden.
What do you mean it was a mistake?
Well, he said that he actually didn't pass anyone. Because to be fair to Scott, the previous exhibition race or a pre-season race, push to pass was allowed at the start of the race. So he had forgotten that the rule had changed.
DRS, push to pass, this and that. Like, but why have they got any of this crap?
I know.
Like, just get rid of it.
I agree with you. But do you find what I find interesting is Scott McLaughlin and Joseph Newgarden from Team Penske, and Roger Penske owns the series. So Roger's actually find himself. So, and had to impose
a tax write-off for this year.
But do you think that's like, in motorsport, should a competing team actually own the category?
That's a loaded question, brother.
Yeah. But isn't it interesting as well that this was not detected by the sport, that it was detected by TV comp anyway? I just found it very interesting that unfolded in that manner.
I just don't understand why they got all these gimmicks. Why can't you just...
The push-to-pass thing has got to stop. The DRS one I don't mind because it's in certain parts of the track and it's governed by the, you know...
Oh, God.
No, I don't mind it. I don't mind DRS. I don't mind that. But push to pass, don't get it.
Did you ever figure out the cheat on Cigarelli?
Nah.
Turn the shifter.
I know there was a cheat, but I never worked it out myself. Hey, just going to close the show off here. Our co-host, Johnny Lardy's over at Motorex this week, so we look forward to speaking with him upon his return. And I know a few of the people you know, Stan, are going as well. So, going as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're off. That's
right. We're off on Friday night, actually.
There you go.
Motorex, yeah.
Stan will be there.
Yep.
Speaking of this weekend as well, EH Holden Club is celebrating 60 years of the EH Holden. So it's the EH Diamond Anniversary Display Day. It's down Sunday, the 5th of May. So if you're listening to us on 88.5 FM, turn us off now and head down to Supreme Court
Don't
Gardens.
Don't turn us off. You can have us on while you're driving.
Yeah, so head to Supreme Court Gardens. Starts at 10 o'clock, finishes at 3. It's $10 per vehicle. So this is more than just the display. It's a heartfelt tribute to the EH Diamond Anniversary.
Do you think Nick will go?
Nick?
Gardner.
Oh, I haven't seen his. Has he got an EH?
I think it's an EH.
I don't know. But there's a few people we know that have EHs.
Or is it an EJ?
I don't know what Nick's is. Yeah,
I believe it was like some special order because it's black.
If it's black, it's probably an EH.
EH?
Yeah. Anyway, there's a few EH owners that we know. So
Nick, if you're listening, you need to go.
Go. There's more information. You can go to our website. There's information there, talkingpower.com.au, or head to ehcarclubwa.org.au. And you can find more information there. They're expecting over 100 EHs down there. So good luck to them. That is on the actual date, the 60, is on August 23rd. So congratulations to them. But this show is on Sunday, May the 5th. All right, guys. Well, look, thanks to our guests for coming on again. Stan, Eddie,
pleasure,
and
mate.
Rob over there as well. Thanks for hanging around and listening to us talk about...
My pleasure, gents. My pleasure.
Thanks, guys, and we really appreciate it. And thanks for listening to our sporting section as well.
It's good to hear you and Simon go at it.
Fair enough.
A lot of it went over my head, but it was actually good to hear.
It's good. Now, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate your time. And look, as we said before, Australian Street Machine Federation can find you on Facebook, your website as well.
Yep.
Get behind these guys. They really need support. Thank you, Rob. Thank you for everything you do in the car club as well. He's the mastermind of a heap of events that we do, Rob. So thank you very much. Simon, thank you as well. Thanks for helping me on the weekend as well with your advice over the phone.
Remember, everyone, every vote counts.
That's true.
Every signature counts.
Thanks, Simon. True. I think that means a lot for Simon saying that.
Yeah.
I actually want to thank you blokes as well. And do you know what? This is my first time ever being on a podcast. I was a bit nervous to come here. And I remember Stan's first words. Stan come out and said, I've done this a few times. And you were going on about how easy these blokes are to talk to and makes things a little bit more comfortable. And do you know what? After an hour or so, it's not easy,
it sort of falls into place.
But I've actually got an idea.
Oh.
which I reckon will make it even easier to loosen everyone up a bit more. Like, do you guys watch the front bar?
Actually, I get where Rob's going with this.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
Yes.
Front bar is one of my favourite shows.
Yep.
Right. And what do? They've got beer on tap, Nikolai Fedorov. Rob,
that would get messy, mate.
No, look at that. Hey, it works on live TV, so surely it can work on a podcast.
I reckon I'd be all right on a couple of beers. I don't need much.
It would loosen everyone up, you know. We could drink before and drink during. Yeah.
Didn't we do an anniversary champagne breakfast or something?
We did when we first went on radio, yeah.
That's right. It was.
Maybe we can get a sponsor, Nick. Don't you know, like, how, what is it? Carlton Draft sponsor the front bar.
Yeah.
We could get, like, I don't know.
There is a brewing company not very far from here that you've recommended us using.
Actually, that's a good point. If any of the car show guys, I'm trying to remember what
they're called. Alcohol and car shows, no, don't mix.
No. They have a restaurant there.
It's not going to go down good at all.
They have a restaurant and they have a really nice car park that's flat.
Was it Long Neck or something?
No. It's something coast, Limestone Coast.
Limestone. Yeah. Coast. It's not very
they're
far
here in
from
Malaga.
So we need to talk to them. Maybe we can do a special episode from there.
Matzo's Ginger Beer, Nick.
Yeah, up in Broome.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Actually, I've got a daughter that works at BW West, Nick. We could do a deal.
Rob, I've got a winery that's just walking distance from my place. I can get some complimentary Jadran wines.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I'll do a plug for Jadran.
Nice Shiraz.
Yes.
Just don't invite me because I won't shut up.
It's all good. All right, guys. Look, thank you very much. It's great to have you on here. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to seeing you at the next car club or next event.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.